This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalbathanchel. The National Institute on Drug Abuse finds that overdose deaths from prescription drugs and from heroin have climbed dramatically in a 14-year period. Deaths from heroin alone have increased by sixfold to 12,000 deaths in 2014. That same federal agency reports that overall the trend of illicit drug use among high school students is declining. But a local survey of youth caught our attention. Illicit use of prescription drugs has almost tripled among high school students in southeastern Connecticut. That's according to the Southeastern Regional Action Council. Today, Where We Live, we wanted to learn more about how students view and use prescription drugs in the context of this national overdose epidemic. A part of the conversation we haven't heard is whether schools should be more involved in the discussion that communities are having with and about our kids. How do you think schools should respond? You can join the conversation. Email wherewelive at WNPR.org. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. Later in the hour, we'll hear from educators, municipal leaders, and a mental health professional. But first, Angela Duhame joins us by phone. She's community educator at Southeastern Regional Action Council. Angela, welcome to Where We Live.
Hello, good morning. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you so much for joining our conversation. Can you tell us a little bit about the council that you sit on?
Absolutely. We are a nonprofit located in Norwich, Connecticut, and we were created by Connecticut legislation in 1989. There's several regional action councils throughout the state, and ours down here covers 20 towns in southeastern Connecticut, from Voluntown down to about Old Lyme area.
So you're a community educator. Who else sits on this council?
We have a director, Michelle Devine. We have a program coordinator, Ray Allen Bergman, and epidemiologist, Christine Miskell.
And what's the point of the council?
So the council was designed to, in order to address the local needs and gaps across lifespan, it can be youth and adults as well, in substance abuse for local towns. So we work with each town to help create a little local coalition, provide with them with some mini grants that they can use to start doing prevention efforts and building their own local efforts to address their issues in each one of their towns.
And part of the work you do is surveying the local students. Tell us about this recent survey.
Absolutely. So we've been doing youth surveys in the schools for almost about a decade. And so as now that we've been able to collect data for a while, we've been able to organize it in a more systematic way. And one of the things that we have is a federal drug-free communities grant, which allows us to target 8 communities in southeastern Connecticut. So we pulled together some data in 2014 in order to apply for that grant, and this past year we've been looking at what has changed in the last year or two. The survey is about, for this survey, is the 3,299 students. And what we did see was we had set goals to address alcohol and marijuana, and those rates did rise, come down, as we predicted and hoped for. But the prescription drug use actually rose, which was something that was a little bit surprising for us, I guess.
So it's interesting. So alcohol and marijuana use, according to this, the kids surveyed, that's actually declined. But in terms of illicit use of prescription drugs, that has risen.
Yes, indeed.
And so what do you do with this information? I mean, that you said that was surprising?
It was a little surprising for us. Sometimes it takes a little bit longer to bring the rates down that we have, but a lot of our efforts since we have been around for quite some time, a lot of the efforts we have done have been around alcohol and marijuana use. So to see the alcohol rate come down, especially with a lot of attention on the risks of driving, the risk of alcohol overdose, and the effects on the teenage brain, we do see that, you know, maybe those things are making a difference. Right now, so because we didn't really expect to see the rate of prescription drug misuse rise, we are in the process of reworking our action plan. We do have 3 years left of our federal drug-free communities grant. And so since our priority had really been alcohol, marijuana, and then prescription drugs, we're going to shift that now because beginning October 1st will be our new federal year for the grant. And so we're going to put some more efforts into the prescription drug misuse.
We're talking to you in the context of the fact that overdose deaths for opioids, including heroin, have increased dramatically in the last decade or so. And so is this concerning to you as someone in the Norwich community that you're hearing from youth who are misusing prescription drugs and the fear of what they will move on from at that point?
Absolutely. We have been, you know, as a Regional Action Council, we respond to whatever concerns are going on. So with a lot of the opioid issues that have happened in the last year to last 18 months, we have been doing forums and education specifically on that. For the overdoses and education, you know, distributing Narcan, doing Narcan training, education around that. But this was the first data to really kind of come through to support that, the link that we talk about, prescription drug painkillers, then being a transition at some point to heroin. This was the first time that we actually had local data with youth to really support all that. So it really does reaffirm the things that we've been learning and training and sharing from the national, the state level, and hearing. So it is. So, it definitely connects to the heroin overdose epidemic and all of those issues as well.
This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. I'm speaking with Angela Duhame, community educator at Southeastern Regional Action Council. They did a recent survey that found students in that region say that they've been misusing prescription drugs, and that has actually tripled just in the last couple of years. You know, Angela, I was curious, you mentioned a lot about education. How do you work with the local schools in the Southeast region?
The biggest way we've been working with schools in the last couple of years, which has really been a wonderful partnership more, is that we've been coming in and doing professional development opportunities. So a lot of, we did a few at the end of the year. We have a few lined up right now. So a lot of the schools are contacting us and having us come in, doing a brief session on warning signs, risk signs, things that you might need to know about prescription drugs or drugs in general, because we do current drug trends. And I always like to reemphasize that we're talking about the entire picture of substance use. Youth are not often starting off with prescription drugs. It might be alcohol is their first thing that they use. So, and we talk about the whole mental health risk piece of it. So doing trainings around those issues has been our biggest thing. And then, of course, following up with the surveys, having conversations, and then working with the school systems to look at their curriculums, identify an evidence-based curriculum, look at some sort of improvement in the health plan and the health curriculums as well.
And what is the challenge to reaching students? I mean, I remember when I was in high school years ago, you know, we would have presentations and public speakers come in. But how effective is that? Is there a different approach that needs to be taken in schools?
There are definitely different approaches. I think people across the field of prevention look at it as, you know, we've been looking at environmental change and larger scale changes around policy and school policies. And I think you have to have a multitude of approaches. For some youth, the fear and the harm and the consequence of using a substance is going to definitely affect them and resonate with them. However, for others, it's going to be that they're coping, they're dealing with stress, undiagnosed mental health, maybe some trauma, abuse, things that have gone on at home, and they're using substances to cope. And then there are personalities that have high-risking behaviors, and it's sort of just natural, and so they're not having any healthy ways of taking risk-taking behaviors, and so substance use is something that they might gravitate. I encourage communities to use a multitude, because every person and every family is different, and so the one strategy fits all will not work.
I was curious about the questions that you used on your survey. You know, what are the prescription drugs that these students say they have misused?
The number one, so we ask it if they've ever misused a prescription drug, or have they ever used a prescription drug that is not prescribed to them. So we do know that it's more of a question around diversion. It's not a prescription that they themselves is in their name. And then they are given a list of the different types, and the top one being pain medications, which would include your opioids. And that does come back as the top of the categories. And then there's the downers, benzos, relaxants, those types of things. And then there's uppers. So we do know that youth are misusing uppers as well, Adderall, Ritalin, and then tranquilizers as well as the other category.
Does the survey get very specific and ask them how they obtain these prescription drugs?
We are not there yet, no. That's probably a next step.
Mm-hmm. Also in studio with us is a school board member from the town of Branford, John Prince. He's also a parent of two sons. John, welcome to Where We Live.
Thank you, Lucy.
I'm interested in your perspective as a Board of Ed member in the town of Branford. You know, again, we're talking about how students are misusing prescription drugs, and, you know, there is research that shows many of them move on to heroin. And so when you hear that in the context of what's happening around our country, you know, if we drill down to the local level, what's the role of the Board of Ed in all of this?
Well, I really appreciate the previous guest's comments about partnership. I think that's really a key. It's not something that one entity can be responsible, and certainly teachers already have a lot to do, and administrators. But from a Board of Ed's perspective, a policy that is strong and that promotes a culture in the district where staff are aware and have been trained properly to be sensitive to changes in their students because they do spend a lot of time with the kids in school, is really critical. I think one of the top issues from the standpoint of what we can do is to keep our students really meaningfully engaged at all times, which means offering a huge variety and diversity of programs and enrichment opportunities where kids can excel and have develop a high level of self-esteem and then also learn about the consequences of messing with your brain and messing with your performance and your ability to do things as well as you now know you can. Branford has a partnership that we got a grant from AT&T, a $10,000 grant, where the counseling center, the police department, the local YMCA, the schools, I believe the businesses are going to be involved, are going to meet and do the kind of comprehensive approach townwide where it's a wall-to-wall kind of coverage. So the multiplicity of approaches is really key.
And that's something that's new, that you're just starting.
There has been one meeting of the steering committee, and I must add also that a parent who has had experience in this area is also part of the steering committee. So there's real experience on there. Yes, it is pretty new.
And then just traditionally, when we look at the local boards of ed, they're the ones that come up with the policies in terms of if a student is found to be using a substance, or abusing drugs, like whether it's zero tolerance. Or can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, that's where the policy really is important. Zero tolerance is a tough thing to be positive about. I think it's more important to be caring and to be aware, and to help students understand that there are consequences and that they may have a second chance. That doesn't mean that there's no discipline involved or that's part of the consequences picture.
How have you talked? I mean, I had also introduced you as a parent of two sons. How have you talked to your boys?
Well, they're both pretty well grown up and finishing their advanced degrees right now. One just did, actually. So, I think we got pretty lucky. We did a good job. My wife is certainly responsible for a good part of that. One of the things we did when they got to a point in their lives where they were going out independently was, as they leave the house, besides I love you, would say to use good judgment and let them know that that was something that was on them. So however deeply that took effect, it seemed to work. I know that we heard from them about things that were going on in school. It makes me also that's my direct experience. We also, I think it's important, we have student board members. And we made a very concerted effort to engage them in things more than just what are the sports activities, what are the next dances. We really engage them in our committee discussions, and we hear from them. When you give them license to talk about things that are happening in the building and they know that it's meaningful, they talk about those kinds of things. So that's going to be an important part of what we do as well, is to make sure the student voice is part of the picture.
I'm speaking with John Prince, who's a Board of Ed member in the town of Branford. On the phone with us was Angela Duhame, community educator at the Southeastern Regional Action Council. Angela, thank you so much for joining Where We Live.
No problem.
We're speaking about substance abuse among youth and asking what role schools should play in this discussion. Does your school district address this issue adequately? You can join the conversation. Comment on our website, wmpr.org/where we live. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. We'll be right back. This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. Stigma surrounds addiction, but lately there have been many community conversations happening in Connecticut about substance abuse. Sadly, these conversations are driven by sobering statistics. Thousands nationwide are dying from overdoses on opioids and heroin. In Connecticut, fatal overdoses more than doubled from 2012 to 2015. A couple of years ago, I reported a three-part series for WMPR on substance abuse among teens, and a fact that has stayed with me, 9 out of 10 adults who are suffering from addiction say they began using alcohol or drugs when they were adolescents. Earlier in the show, we heard about a survey of high schoolers in southeastern Connecticut that found use of illicit prescription drugs has tripled. The findings made us wonder how schools today are involved in prevention and what, if anything, should they be doing. In studio with me is John Prince, who's a Board of Education member in the town of Branford. And John, I wanted to turn to you before we get to our other guests. You mentioned that you have the student voice as part of the Board of Ed's work. And I'm curious about, you know, what they're telling you in terms of, you know, why their peers may be using prescription drugs or what they need from adults to help them so that they're not making that bad decision. Mm.
They're really not telling us anything about that at this point because we discussions that we have are pretty well confined informally but formally to items that are on the agenda. And we haven't really addressed this as a topic on an agenda, either a committee meeting or a full board meeting yet. I do think that it's now going to be part of an upcoming agenda, certainly after the school year starts and we get our kids into the routine of coming to the committee meetings. That's something we will talk about.
Has there been a reluctance in the community to talk about it with students in a very candid way?
No, not at all. We've already had one community-wide forum. I did not attend it, but I heard about it and it was very well attended. And quite effective. And I think it really led to the development of this steering committee for the, we haven't even named it yet. That's how new it is. It's a prevention council. So, and I do believe students will be a part of that. And I'm looking forward to hearing from the students. It's tough when your kids are no longer in the schools. I still do have contact with a lot of kids because I'm involved with an arts program. And They will be participants in this conversation for sure.
I wanted to bring into the conversation Michelle Sember. She's a resident in Branford, and she actually spoke on her show just a few months ago. Michelle, welcome back to Where We Live.
Hi, Lucy. How are you?
I'm doing well. And, you know, part of the reason we wanted to focus on this discussion today is something that you had said to us when you appeared just a few months ago about the role of schools. Can you reiterate that for the listeners who are listening right now?
The role
of schools in terms of dealing with substance abuse in the community.
Well, I think the schools, especially in the suburban area, I don't think they acknowledge that there is a problem. And I'm trying to get more awareness into that.
And you have a unique perspective because you've been very open about one of your son's struggles with addiction.
Yes. Yes, I have. And, you know, in the schools, we just seem that they hope that nothing goes wrong, that they seem to be reactive than proactive.
And can you talk about, you said that you're trying to get more awareness. Is it hard when you say that, you know, schools aren't really focused on this? Is it hard to get them to think about a different way of educating students about, you know, the dangers?
Yes. I know that there's going to be committees and boards, but it actually takes a long period of time to get these committees going. I would really like to get real people, real life into the schools to see actually how it affects, you know, people in our community and stuff. A face with the addiction.
Ann Gruenberg is actually on the phone with us now, president of the Connecticut Association of Boards of Education. Ann, welcome to Where We Live.
Thank you, and thank you for addressing this really important topic.
So we were hearing from a parent in the town of Branford. Again, she's got a personal connection to this issue, but she was saying that it is difficult to get schools to talk about what's going on recently with the opioid epidemic that's sweeping our country. From the Connecticut Association of Boards of Education perspective, what conversations are happening in our local schools?
you've addressed the issue of policies and the fact that school systems do have policies, where required statutorily to have policies. I think the sort of heartbreaking circumstance when an individual, when a student is involved with drug abuse, is it's very difficult to deal with across the board in a whole range of communities. And I appreciate the Michelle's perspective in terms of the suburban communities, because it's very easy for people to stereotype and assume that it's just an urban issue, but it's most definitely suburban and also rural, and you know, we're definitely seeing an increasing prevalence because of, possibly in part because of, the accessibility and also the degree to which opioids are highly, highly addictive. So if, you know, if there are like pills hanging around the house, it's an easy gateway. I do think schools are doing a lot, and again, we're required to address the issues, but the degree of effectiveness is another story. I mean, we don't want to just jump through the hoops or do, you know, what is mandated. I think, like, having a sincere commitment to truly addressing the issues, and John was talking earlier about the partnerships, you know, it definitely is not just an issue or problem that can be addressed by any single entity. It has to be a partnership between, and including families and including students, so that they're actively involved. And one of the issues just developmentally, you know, for high school students is that sense of invulnerability, you know, that, well, it's not going to happen to me. You know, I heard about somebody having an overdose or dying from an overdose, and that perception that, you know, it's somebody else's problem, but it's not mine. Communication is a huge issue. So that's not, you know, it's hard to monitor the degree to which that's happening, but certainly having a climate, like a social climate that is conducive to healthy communication, makes a huge difference, so that we're really focusing on prevention. And then when a situation is already occurring, to be able to have access to intervention to decrease the stigma associated with it. And some of that is qualitative, you know, but some of it is also structural, you know, how the infrastructure does or does not support healthy development. Definitely focusing on healthy options rather than just reacting to the difficulty. But I'll tell you a personal story. I mean, more than 25 years ago, like a family friend who was younger than I actually died of addiction, and both of his parents were doctors. So I think definitely we need to move past the stereotype.
You mentioned from a Board of Ed standpoint, you know, there are policies that you have to have.
Yes.
But in terms of, you know, obviously those policies often have zero tolerance. But is there a downside to talking about the risk of addiction in schools? Does perception become reality at some point?
So I just want to make sure I'm understanding your question. And I have the radio in the other room, which is like slightly unsynced with what you're saying. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm curious, with Board of Ed policy, obviously zero tolerance is a big part of that, but is there a downside to talking about substance abuse in schools? Does perception, if kids think, oh, well, when I get to high school, like I'm going to be going to school with a lot of kids that are doing drugs. I mean, does perception at some point become reality?
Well, I hear what you're saying, and I share the concern. I think there is a potential for, like, so much focus on this topic to actually become a self-fulfilling prophecy, that people see this as, like, almost normalizing the process of addiction. And also when peers are affected, you know, they're communicating with their friends, and, like, everybody's doing it, and, oh, come on, you know, like the sort of peer pressure to do it. Those can be factors. I do think that overemphasizing it does have a potential downside, but the risk of dismissing it or denying the extent of the issue also has a downside. So finding a balance, you know, so that the issues are being addressed, and particularly reducing the stigma about communicating around these issues, that's very, very important so that families and students can communicate with each other and also communicate with school personnel. And there's really a team effort that's effective in addressing this, and the prevention cannot be overstated. I mean, it's just so, so important to try to engage students in meaningful ways.
This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. I'm speaking with Anne Gruenberg, president of the Connecticut Association of Boards of Education. We're talking about substance abuse in our community, specifically how schools should respond to this discussion. Should they be doing more? You know, Anne mentioned the importance of partnerships. We have the first selectman of Ridgefield, Connecticut, on the phone, Rudy Marconi. Welcome to Where We Live.
Thank you. Welcome.
So tell me about the work that you're doing through the Connecticut Council of Municipalities in terms of talking about substance abuse in our communities.
Well, CCM, the Connecticut Conference of Municipalities, represents around 160 municipalities in the state of Connecticut and does a lot of our lobbying work for us in Hartford when there's legislation being passed that will impact each and every one of our communities. And several years ago, I raised the question at a board of directors meeting concerning opiates and the problems in the communities, and we got an incredible response that everyone was aware of it, and that's how CCM began its efforts to bring awareness to the municipalities and to let the chief elected official know that they must play a role in a partnership role with the Board of Education in the community. It's a very, very serious issue. This year alone, in 2016, we are expecting 832 overdose deaths. 832. We now lose more people to overdose than we lose to motor vehicle accident fatalities on our highways. And I think that statistic alone should have people stand up and say, wait a minute. What is going on? Through all the efforts that have been made over the years, Lucy, have we helped? Yes, we have, but we're falling behind. We are not winning this war at all. And it's a very serious issue for a lot of people, and it's a tough topic to talk about. Multiple kids, young people in rehabilitation, come out, relapse, unfortunately, ends up in an overdose, but at the school level, at the middle school level, when kids at 12 years old, by the way, which is the average age of experimentation, not only here in Connecticut, but across the United States, when they are exposed to that drug, challenged through peer pressure or what have you, that's the beginning. And although not every heroin addict smoked marijuana, the gateway to that is the issue. Mm-hmm. And this year we're looking at the possibility of the legislature entertaining the legalization of marijuana. So while we're trying to figure out ways to create educational opportunities to make our children more aware of the consequences of alcohol and substance abuse, the legislature, on the other hand, is starting to look at, can we gain tax revenue from legalizing marijuana like they did in Colorado, where they're now generating about $125 million. There are going to be societal consequences.
Can I ask you, Selectman Marconi,
sure.
Because you are obviously a town leader in Ridgefield, I mean, how are your schools focusing on this issue of substance abuse? What more needs to be done there?
Well, every 4 years we do, it's called the Search Institute. It's a survey of, you can go either from the middle school through high school or from ninth grade through 12th, and you do a survey, and you'll get answers back, and it gives you a general trend, an idea. Now, are there some answers in there that are fictitious just to try and throw the testers? Sure, there's always that component. And if you get over 10%, it kind of nullifies your survey, so we've been below that, so we feel confident that we're getting relatively decent information. We're getting an idea of what's going on. But the best way to do it is to work with the parents. You need to make parents aware of what exposures their child is going to be experiencing. And we started a program for parents of fifth grade children who are going into the middle school years. Our middle school is 6, 7, and 8. And what they will be exposed to and the challenges. And you first need to educate the parents so that the parents understand where the influences are going to come from, what they're going to look like, how they can notice behavioral changes in their children, whether they withdraw, whether they study less, whether they're doing something else. These are all signs that can help parents be better equipped, more tools in their toolbox to be parents to help raise safe children. There's no question that you can keep your child away from alcohol and drugs up to 19, 21 years old. That person has a tremendous chance of never having an issue. And we need the parents to help. Mm-hmm. So here in Richfield, we have our local prevention council. That is through DEMIS, which is the Department of Mental Health Addiction Services. We also have a local doctor who started something called Project Resilience to help build resiliency in our kids. We have multitude of speakers that come through on a regular basis that we expose our children to. And our health classes are beginning to focus more on the issues surrounding substance abuse and the devastating consequences you can suffer. It's a tough group to get to, because someone mentioned earlier in the program that at that age of 16, 17, and 18, you have a sense of invincibility, that if you're going to try something once, it's never going to have never-ending consequences for you, and you're going to experiment, and that's the difficult part of it. Mm-hmm. So we need parents to really be involved, really communicate with your children. We need a lot more education on this at the school level for both the students and the parents. And I think then you will begin to see some changes, but it's going to take a while. The biggest issue with the opiates happens not during the high school years, but as soon as they're out of high school at that 18, 19, 20 level through college into their 20s. That's a huge.
Oh, I think we lost Selectman Marconi. We'll try to get him back on. But I wanted to turn to our Board of Education member here in the town of Brantford, John Prince. Can you respond at all to what the Selectman was saying from Ridgefield about how the buck really stops with the parents?
The parents are clearly a critical part of the picture. There needs to be clear communication about district policies and positions. I think parents should have a real understanding about what they need to do when they are prescribed medication that may be available in the medicine cabinet or around the house, and have a real honest discussion with their children about, why do I get this prescription? What does it do? What is it for? How does it make me feel? And I'm a grown-up and you're a child, and this could happen to you if you want to play with this stuff. Here are the kinds of consequences if you find your way into my medicine cabinet. Really, the point that I want to make, though, is along the lines of how we treat the children who serve on our Board of Ed as Board of Ed representatives. I thought of it as a kind of an insult to their time and their intelligence to only ask of them what's happening in sports, what's the next dance, because their voice is really important in this whole, in the bigger picture, in the scheme of things. So the kinds of information that we deliver in the schools needs to take that approach as well, and not be, we're going to have a speaker today who's going to talk to you about opioids. Mm-hmm. No, you need to really engage the children, hear from them, let them test their understanding, and not be afraid to explore the realities of this and not just kind of the Nancy Reagan just say no to drugs mm-hmm. approach.
I want to turn back to Ann Gruenberg, president of the Connecticut Association of Boards of Education. Before we get to break, Ann, a statistic that really struck me from the Connecticut School Health Survey in 2015, where 28.5% of kids said that they were offered, sold, or given a prescription drug while on school property. And so I'm curious if you could talk about the relationship between schools and law enforcement, and is there enough communication there when we're dealing with this issue?
That's a good question. I think the importance of collaborating, for schools to collaborate with other community organizations, including law enforcement, is very important under a whole range of circumstances. In terms of drugs, it gets back to the school climate, and if students are being meaningfully involved in healthy choices, they may be far less likely to do what you're describing. It's a balance, and when students have a clear sense of the potential consequences of their actions, they may be less likely to engage in what you're describing. When it's on school property, it brings up legal issues in terms of searches of lockers, and I think some schools have taken very vigorous, proactive, or even aggressive measures to monitor what's going on with students. But I think the approach of being preventative and, again, really focusing on the potential consequences, really to engage students in understanding the consequences of their own behavior, which includes the potential for them to hurt their friends by sharing or offering substances to their friends on school property. So clearly the schools have a responsibility to monitor what's going on in the school, but hopefully that doesn't mean that there will be a police state in the school. And that it's a fine line sometimes. But having, really clear messages. I think there's another issue that is part of the picture that hasn't really been addressed is involves the relationship between prescription drugs, which are relatively easy to access, and then very, very dangerous boutique types of drugs that are deadly. And, so when students start with something and then they move into something else, it just is a very slippery slope.
And, I'm sorry, we're almost out of time, but I wanted to just turn that question back to Selectman Marconi from the town of Ridgefield. Your take on the collaboration between schools and police. We just have a couple of minutes.
Well, it's certainly gotten better, but there are some laws that prevent the correct collaboration from taking place in terms of the sharing of information. There is information that the schools may have about certain individuals, and that information, they're prevented from sharing that information, and I hear this from our police chief a lot. And although they work very closely, they need a review of the laws that exist today to make that communication a lot better. We have SROs in all of our schools, just about every one of our schools. And that has been a big help for us, the student resource officers. So the law is playing its role to the best of its ability. But to wrap it up quickly, I would say legislation prevents them from doing the type of work they need to do.
So here's a novel way to involve law enforcement. It's a trauma-informed approach to being proactive. Police departments, and we do this in Brantford, without divulging names or information, can call the school administrators on Monday morning and say, just want to let you know we had a call at such and such an address. There are students at that address. Kid might have had a rough weekend. You need to be aware of that because behaviorally you're going to see evidence that there was a tough time for this kid. And this child may be at risk for doing the kinds of things we're talking about.
Well, we're almost out of time. So I want to, again, thank John Prince, who was just speaking there, Board of Ed education member at the town of Brantford. Also, Selectman Rudy Marconi from the town of Ridgefield and Ann Gruenberg, president of the Connecticut Association of Boards of Education. Thank you all for your time. When we return, we're going to actually hear about an approach that the schools in Litchfield County, are taking. This is Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. Today we're talking about substance abuse among high school students. Joining us on the phone now is Donna Campbell, Executive Director of Greenwood's Counseling Referrals. Hi, Donna.
Hi.
So we're hearing about a program that Greenwood's Counseling Referrals is rolling out with Litchfield Public Schools. Can you tell us about it?
I sure can. We're very excited to do this. A lot of schools have worked very hard on mental health and substance use disorder kinds of services, but they tend to be very fragmented. And schools are not in the business of mental health, but they really need to be. And so I think what's refreshing about this approach is it's very comprehensive. We're looking at the school and children in a total way, so that we're looking at, 40% of kids in the schools are in trouble educationally. And if you look at those issues, they go beyond substance abuse and look at the social, emotional, and psychological functioning of kids.
And so oftentimes if someone's struggling with substance abuse, there's a mental health disorder as well?
Well, it's more psychosocial. It could be mental health. But I think when you look at 40% of children who are in bad educational shape, they're very vulnerable to substance use disorders because they're struggling. And when you're struggling, you're looking for something to kind of kill the pain. Substance use disorders don't exist in a vacuum. And for many kids, there's trauma, there's poverty, there's problems at home, there's issues with their own health.
So starting this school year, what will Greenwood's be doing in collaboration with the public schools to reach all of the students there?
Well, we're trying to take a universal approach. So we're working with parents and kids. So we'll have groups for parents. We're doing a needs assessment with them to determine what they'd really like to talk about, and rather than kind of going in with a top-down approach. And with the kids, what we're trying to do is build a system that they want to attend. It's not singling out children that we feel need to have a label, but rather offering something that they want to do. So they would be approached by mentoring other kids and learning the psychosocial and sort of resiliency skills they need, and then passing those on.
How difficult was it to roll out a program like this? Because, obviously schools are in the business of teaching. They're not thinking about mental health. So
it's very difficult. I've worked in a lot of school systems, and it's always seen as a sideshow, really, to the business of teaching kids and, preparing them for test taking. But I have to say, the school system in Litchfield is refreshing. They really look at the kids in a holistic way, and they don't see this as something that they have to do. It's something they want to do. That makes it a lot easier. And they understand that we need to really integrate the curriculum as part of the school day and not something, again, that's segmented out for special needs children.
Well, what's happening in Litchfield County that's informing the public schools this is something that's needed?
Well, I think schools understand that, but again, they tend to have a lot of services. So there's psychologists in the schools, there's school-based clinics, but they're all sort of very segmented. And what we're hoping to do is create a culture that has psychosocial intervention as a part of the deal. It's not just something that's added on.
We got a tweet from a listener, Donna. They ask, what to do about teens who abuse prescription drugs because their parents do? What about whole family care?
Well, that's really important. That's why what we're trying to do involves family intervention. And so there's actually three levels. There's the prevention component. There's an intervention level when you see things coming up, and then there's the sort of the crisis level where their problems have already, taken on a kind of significant part of the family, and that's when you really have to get people into care. And that's pretty much our job. I mean, Greenwood's is all about access to mental health services, and we are kind of the match.com of mental health. People come to us looking for service. We have a network of private practice providers, so we see people. And then we match them to the best therapist in our network. And when finances are a problem, we have a program that gives some help for paying for that service.
I'm talking with Donna Campbell, Executive Director of Greenwood's Counseling Referrals. Greenwood's is launching a program with Litchfield Public Schools to provide mental health education to students in those schools. Donna, if you could walk us through exactly the curriculum that Greenwood's will be working on with the schools to reach these students?
Well, I think one of the last speakers talked about a trauma-informed approach, and that's what we're using. There's a number of evidence-based approaches we're discussing with the school system right now, and we haven't determined which one we're using because we're still looking at the age range of kids to start with. This is really a pilot. One of the good things about where we're working is that the junior high school and this high school are in the same building. So we're hoping that as young as we can reach the kids, it's really much better as they transition, then the program becomes part of their day. But there's a number of trauma-informed approaches, and again, we're looking at an active parenting of teens, a program called Dignity Diplomats. There's a number of things we're looking at that have been tested.
And what about cost? I mean, how are you able to do this?
Well, we're very lucky. We got a grant from the Connecticut Community Foundation, and a private donor stepped up with a significant grant to do this for us. So we're extremely lucky. Greenwood relies totally on private donations for its work, and we have some very generous sponsors.
You said this is a pilot, so after a year, you're going to look at what's been accomplished, and then where do you go from there?
Well, we go back to some foundations and hope that people realize the importance of this work. I mean, this is going to be tested. The first semester, we're really going to be fine-tuning things, and then the second semester, taking some lessons learned, and then going into the next year. We should have enough funds to go for three semesters, and then, you know, we hope we can entice others to support us.
Anything like this being done in other school districts around the state?
I'm sure there are. I mean, I really don't know enough to say exactly what's going on, but what I do know from my own experience, which is too many years to count, is that these programs tend to be very segmented again, and I think it's partially the way schools are constructed. The culture has to change. When you're focused on teaching, you see everything else as something that's distracting. It has to be a school system that really wants it and families that really want it. And I think we've just been very lucky to find a school system that does. And I think what we're trying to learn from this is how to instill that sense of urgency in other schools without making it a crisis. Kids don't use drugs just because they're in somebody's cabinet. Kids use drugs because of killing pain and because it's fun. But risk-taking behavior, again, it doesn't exist in a vacuum. Not every kid's going to go into their parents' pharmaceutical supply and take drugs. It's a certain kind of kid that does that.
You know, I just read a statistic from the Connecticut Health Survey that's been done through the Department of Public Health, and, you know, 28% of kids say that they've actually obtained or been offered a prescription drug on school property.
Right.
And
well,
so
that's, you know, where they congregate, so that's where drugs get distributed. That's not new, by the way.
But it speaks to the reason why prevention education is key, right? So
right,
understand.
Absolutely. I mean, I think, but by the time the kids are in high school, they've already been offered drugs. I mean, it's not like it's the first time.
I want to take a quick call. Jessica from New Haven, we've got about a minute. Can you tell us your question or comment?
Yeah, I'm a former high school educator in a district close to these guys, and I just wanted to know how you're including the teachers in these conversations, because it's great to hear the board that are doing, the administration, but I'm not confident it's always trickling back down to the educators.
All right, great point, Jessica.
That's an excellent question, and it's absolutely a part of the program. The faculty are involved, and they also have access to, they'll be in some of the parent groups. We're doing special groups for the teachers, so yes, that's really important. Thank you for bringing that up.
So you'll be working with teachers and getting their perspective on what they're seeing and
absolutely.
The training that they need?
Absolutely. And all of the sort of support staff that kids go to, school nurses, lunch people, janitors, I mean, it really has to be a cultural thing. It has to be everyone.
Well, I want to thank Donna Campbell, Executive Director of Greenwood's Counseling. Later this month, Greenwood's Counseling will officially launch its program with Litchfield Public Schools. So thank you so much for speaking with us. Our show is produced by Lydia Brown and Jeff Tyson. Our technical producer is Kion Wolf. Special thanks to Executive Producer Katie Tularski today. You can continue this conversation on our website, wmpr.org/where we live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. Thanks for listening.